Welcome back to the Lighthouse Conversations, a show featuring entrepreneurs and tastemakers from the worlds of art, culture, tech, and of course, food. This is Hesham Montasser, and I'm excited to be back with you after a summer break. I'm joined today by Hatem Matar, pitmaster and founder of the Matar Farm, who have become a sensation in Dubai, known for their artisanal smoked meat and briskets. They were first made famous by their pop-up at the Sirkal Avenue, and have now found themselves a more permanent home within Time Out Market in downtown Dubai. As you may remember, we spoke to Sandy Hayek, general manager of Time Out Market Dubai, before the break, and she said that she thinks this is just the beginning of the homegrown food movement.
I think it's just the beginning.
Yeah.
This is just the
beginning. I have the same feeling.
Yeah, because imagine a couple of years from now, we're definitely expecting to see more of this. And especially places, I would want to look back 5 years and say this is a homegrown place that is still strong until today. So I think that this is just the beginning.
The Matar Farm has become synonymous with a food movement that calls Dubai its home. Hatem himself might identify as a Dubaiite and a third culture kid at heart, with a mixed upbringing that in many ways wind up defining him and his mission at Matar Farm. We were talking, you and I, a little bit about Egypt. I was telling you how part of my mission when we started the Lighthouse 5 years ago is to reconcile some identity issues, to put it mildly.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about your relationship with Egypt, because you are from there. Your parents are Egyptian. You spent all your summers there, you told me, most of your summers.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about your relationship with Egypt and what it means for you.
Egypt is home for me. I was born in Alexandria.
Your mother is an Alexandrian?
Alexandrian, Sheikh Magnifique, Stanley Al-Bahr, right? My dad is from Cairo.
Okay.
And opposing ends of the spectrum in Egypt.
Social strata spectrum.
Yeah. My dad's father was...
It's always very interesting, by the way.
Yeah. My dad's father was Sheikh Sharawi's teacher.
Amazing.
Wow. Right? So he was a poet. He was a general in the military. And my mom's side of the family is Ailat al-Munib. So they were...
Very different backgrounds.
Completely. They were the mayors. They were the Ottoman mayors of Egypt when the Turkish... Empire came.
Ancien regime, as we say, yani old, the old Egyptian, blue blooded.
Exactly. So we're
a mix.
An exact
and how mix. Did that turn out for you?
Oh,
beautiful.
You can see it.
you know definitely what I mean? See it.
We learned, me and my, I have two sisters. Mm. All of our character, all of our upbringing is an Egyptian upbringing because we, like, even if we were in Japan, it was an Egyptian household.
Yeah.
So, no matter where we were, it was an Egyptian upbringing.
Did you find yourself gravitating to one side or the other? I'm going to explain this a little bit. I'm not from a very different... My background is not that different. My dad is born and raised in Beniswef. Mm-hmm. Became a professor, but came from a very typical Egyptian family, Masaid. And my mother was very much part of that class you talked about with her... Her grandma, you know, and very connected to all sorts of, all of these.
Yeah.
And I grew up in the middle and I gravitated and oscillated over the years to see which side I fit in or whether I even have to choose sides. Not that I had to do that, but I felt that was part of my identity that I kind of had to take some mental notes. How did that come up in your upbringing?
When we were teenagers, we spoke French from my mom's side and my dad's. Yani, my dad said these kids will speak French.
Yeah.
So we would be somewhere, and someone would be like, "Oh, regarde comment," you know. I'm like, and we wouldn't say anything, you know.
Yeah, come here.
And then
my mother spoke to her siblings and her mother all her life in French.
Yeah,
and I grew up in that household.
We would excuse ourselves. We'd be like, "Tu peux fermer la fenêtre?" And they're like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Alors fait que la macanche osdi." And I'm like, "Yeah, no problem." So we didn't actually gravitate towards one or the other. We had, I would say, our humility, our sense of wulad balad from my dad's side.
That's beautiful.
And then how to navigate between the two from my mom's side. You know what I mean? Having the capability to go all the way left or all the way right, we've got both of those capabilities. The way we dress, the way we eat, what we eat, but always centered in the middle.
And you grew up where?
That's a complicated question. Mm-hmm. I grew up Saudi, Canada, Bahrain, Kuwait, the UAE.
Was that following your dad's career?
Yeah. My dad was a project director for IBM.
Okay.
And alhamdulillah, every time he did such a fantastic job somewhere,
they promoted him to
They would like, oh, we want you here. And we always had a running joke in the family. My dad would say, okay, guys, how was this year? We're like, oh, we made great friends. Alhamdulillah, it was such a great year. And he's like, we're moving.
And what did that mean for you? I mean, did that teach you to navigate more, to be flexible? Are your relationships transactional? I mean, what comes from that constant move on the go? Because it's hard to build roots, right? I mean, you already come from a country where you didn't grow up, essentially. Your third culture, essentially, but also moving multiple times over those years. What did that mean?
If you look at the Matar Farm currently and what it stands for, connection with strangers, it comes from not having, going back 12 years, 17 years, oh, I've known this guy all my life. I don't have that. I've got friends of mine that live here that I knew from when I was 12 to 15. Then I have a crew that I knew from when I was 19 to 23. And we're all expats here. My search for connection, my personal search for connection, is what's translated into the Matar Farm. Shayl al-Arib al-Gharib. I'm a hugger. Corona was a disaster for me. Hi, how was your sandwich? Can I hug you? They're like, don't touch me. The Matar Farm and its sense of connection and its sense of community comes from not belonging to any community, but being a part of each.
And building your own community now.
And that's what we're doing.
So Matar Farms is, in my view, it's essentially a sensation. And it really took off by storm. You have a huge following of supporters, people that love you, love your concept, love you personally. Do you feel that you're now building your own community? Are you dictating the terms of what that community should look like? Or is that just haphazardly and you're going to places and just meeting people?
First of all, as a person, I don't like to dictate, period.
Okay. Are you sure?
100%.
Okay. Good to know.
the guys that the community that we tried to build in Egypt over the summer, I can tell you this because you're a fellow Egyptian, was split down the middle between people that were extremely welcoming and people that were the polar opposite, standoffish.
Very Why? Strong, Why were they standoffish?
Very strong sense of Anna. Very strong sense of, I'm not going to wait. Very strong sense of some wonder, but she, wallahi, she did it. She meant it in a good way. One lady was like, "Ya habibi, where is the manager, like Sahab al-Makin?" And I'm like, "Oh, he's not here at the moment." I'm wearing my apron, shirt off, cap backwards, just like this. And she's like, "Where is he?" I'm like, "Tell me what you want, and I'll tell him." She's like, "I just want to tell him he's doing a really good job." And I'm like, thank you very much. That really means a lot to me. She's like, you're the owner? And I'm like, yes. She's like, yeah, habibi. And she put 200 pounds in my apron. You know what I mean?
Short.
No, I said, alhamdulillah.
Thank you very much.
200 pounds. I took it. And I'm like, you know, because none of us are from here, the UAE, we don't have a strong sense of Anna.
Can I go back to that pop-up in the summer? Do you think if you had done this not in Egypt, you would have had a different reaction? In other words, do you think you were triggered by the fact that it was in Egypt? Or... just, I mean, it was busy and a lot of people came to you because people really love the product.
Yeah.
But was it the Egypt part a factor in your triggering?
You said it. Okay. You said it. It was because it was Egypt and I had high hopes.
Yeah.
When we open in Egypt, inshallah.
You'll take it personally. I can tell you that much.
Not only will I take it personally, but I'm not going to build a business. I'm going to build a community. I'm going to break down the barriers where you think you can skip the line. Because you belong to somebody or a certain thing. Yeah, or the people that do love us are not cliquey. They come from different cliques, and we make that group bigger. Like, you know, in Egypt, the people that you grew up with your whole life, it's your clique. You know, the mantiqti. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And you stick to that crew. It doesn't really, you don't make friends as an adult. Here in Dubai, you make friends as an adult all the time. I would love, and I could be way off base here, by the way. My Egyptian experience is the summers, you know?
But it means something.
But the way I read it was if we did go build the Matar Farm as a business, it would be for the sole purpose of putting everybody on a long picnic table and having all of those people become friends.
So So I know a lot of people that are were in your shoes, let's say a year ago, that have a stable day job, have an entrepreneurial concept in mind, in many cases, as you did, started it, it's doing okay, and they're thinking, should I leave that stable day job that pays the money, keeps the lights on, so to speak, and shift? Or is it too risky?
Mm.
You went through this and you straddled a day job with a successful, effectively night job for a long time.
Yeah.
Walk us through how that started, but then also your decision-making process, because I think it's very important, because I feel like a lot of people that would be listening would be in that position trying to make those decisions.
My day job as the GM of an oil and gas company is extremely well paid, alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah.
Which made me do the Matar farm. I mean, remember, you know the backstory of it wasn't a brand and it was the house and stuff like that. We were barbecuing for friends and family. Able to continue that without having to look at, God bless my partners and the guys that look at the Excel sheets, the cost of a tomato, the cost of a brisket. I was still the guy. Hey, what did you think? High five. Can I get you something else? Try the pastrami. And my partners are like, Ya Hatem, Ya Akhi, this is a business. Please stop giving these people extra, like a half a pound of extra brisket. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you think of it as a business from the beginning or as a hobby? Or
I still don't think of it as a business. I don't think of it as such. Yeah. And that's, God bless my partners, that's why we are where we are. Because if I had done it my way, I would have ran it into the ground 3 months.
And how long did you straddle those two lives?
Until 2 weeks ago.
Until 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Mabruk.
Allah barak fik, thank you.
So how long was that period?
We opened the Matar farm the beginning of 2018. So professionally, 3 years. But when I was doing it out of my backyard and catering the consulates and the palaces and stuff like that, 7 years.
And what pushed you over the edge?
Honestly, Islamically, we say, alamat al-izn al-ilahi, at-taysir fil-umur. Right?
Okay.
So my boss came to me, made the decision for me, actually. He said, Hatem, you haven't been pulling your weight. And I said, I know. He said, wallah, it was very amicable. He said, you haven't been doing any work. I said, wallah, I know. He said, I know you've got like a thing on the side. And I'm like, yeah. He's like,
He can just look at your Instagram.
Yeah, he's
will
like,
realize
he's like it's,
that you have
exactly. He's like, I know it's not the side anymore. He says, I know we're the side. We're. I think we should part ways. I said, you know, thank you for your time. Thank you for your mentorship. I really appreciate it.
Would you have just left?
No, nope, never.
Really?
I would have never left.
Why? You have a legitimate business.
No, you
like
know,
you're in time out. Like you can walk downtown and go into your.
You know why? You know the answer as to you said if people were listening, what's the deciding factor?
Yeah, yeah.
The deciding factor is
get
how
fired.
No, it's how that. Much sleep you want, how much you want to have a social life, an athletic life, a girlfriend, a boyfriend, any of those things. If you're willing to, I mean, I have no friends. No social life. I've given up my jujitsu, my pretend jujitsu career, my pretend skydiving career.
No boyfriends.
No, nothing. No, nothing. That. You know what I mean? And if you're will, and no sleep.
Yeah. If I'm not gonna be your friend, by the way, because this is like exhausting.
Yeah, we're gonna be eventually.
La, we're gonna. Today, this is it. This is
yeah,
this is
the
conversation.
Last, and then
take
the
some
last
pictures. I want to be very clear where this is going. This is not turning into more than this.
You tricked me.
No, man, you're looking for friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's be very
clear. The truth is, it is how much you're willing to give up to do both.
Okay.
And the security of a paycheck gives you the capability to chase your dream because you're not chasing the dream for a paycheck. But in exchange for that, you're doing 24-hour days, 48-hour days. You're doubling the amount of hours in a day.
Since you left, obviously a very short period of time, so maybe it's too early to talk about this, but still I'm curious. Now that's your job. I mean, that's what you do. Are you looking at it differently in the sense of, is it turning from the side gig that became a fun, that's a really fun thing where you meet a lot of people and so on to now you're like, oh shit, I have to build a business?
No.
No.
Now I'm thinking.
Are you in denial?
No.
Okay.
I'm thinking, now I've got the mental bandwidth to dream what the Matar farm is going to be in 2030.
So what is that? Talk to us about the dream.
It's probably another, you probably have to invite me again. This is me setting myself up for get together number two. No, the Matar farm has big dreams, all community based. The cool thing about, actually not the cool thing, any company or brand that is selling you something is trying to convince you of a certain feeling associated with that brand.
Mm.
We're not lying about the feeling you have with our brand. We're like, in my opinion, we're purveyors of emotion. And that emotion is a sense of belonging, an extreme amount of happiness, or comfort. Because sometimes, I mean, sometimes I could see people having matar farm. They look like they just, they look like toilet. I'm like, what's wrong? Like, ah, man, you know, it's just another thing. This is my comfort meal. We're purveyors of those emotions.
Yeah. And you talk about those emotions very openly, which I noticed. So doing my research on this, you talk very openly about your divorce. You talk very openly about your relationship with your children. You talked openly. I found this quote yesterday, which I found interesting. You saying, we weren't a family that says, I'm proud of you.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I'm Egyptian, as you are, and it's not something we talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
So what made you say all these things? Why are you open about all of this?
If you know being Egyptian, you had to be one of three things. Doctor, mohandis, businessman. I wanted to be a lawyer. You can tell I'm a talker.
Yeah.
My dad at the dinner table, having dinner, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to apply for this and go to law school. He's like, oh, it's so funny. He's like, you will be engineer. I'm like, Baba, if I build a bridge,
out of Rami.
Wallahi, I said, if I build a bridge, Baba, if I become like a civil engineer and I build a bridge, it's going to fall. And those people that die will be ala raptak. And he's like, no problem. I will go Hajj. If someone listens to this, inshallah, as a 12-year-old, as a 7-year-old, as a 15-year-old, I want them to know it's okay to be a chef. It's okay to be a carpenter. It's okay to be, but to be the best at it and open your own atelier.
But why were you saying that you didn't get, I guess, acknowledgement or nobody said, I'm so proud of you. Isn't because that a given? And do you think it was lack of interest or no. That's just the way
that's the way they were raised and they raised us the way they were raised.
Yeah.
But if we have a paradigm shift, I tell the girls I'm proud of them every day. It's in our secret handshake. We have a secret handshake. And I tell them I'm proud of them every day. And I tell them I love them every day.
Do you think we all overcompensate? Because we are saying this every day. It's exhausting. I wasn't told much, by the way, also I'm proud of you. And this was not part of the family coda.
Hashim, I had my father stay with me during Corona. Matar Farm was slinging the gospel of barbecue across the entire city. I took a bag. I put it in front of him at the dinner table. And he looked at it and he said, Ida. I said, that's your name. He said, I know. I said, are you proud?
But hey, you're courting the guy.
No. And we had that moment.
If my kids do this to me, I will not be pleased.
When you'll be teenagers, when they're old enough, they'll do it. I said, are you proud? He looked at me. I looked at him. He said, yes, I am. We hugged. Buried the hatchet. Khalas. Now he's like, my son is a restaurateur. We're like, Ahmed, we know. He goes and tells, my son has a restaurant. Now he's like, we both got that out. Now he's telling everybody more than 12 times a day.
So it wasn't that he wasn't proud, he didn't verbalize it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No, and before I was pretending to be a chef, I was pretending to be a professional athlete. I was on the national swim team here. I was a wrestler. I was a professional kickboxer in university, undefeated. All of that stuff. And when I'd come tell Pop, he's like, that's nice. You know what I mean?
I think that's okay. I mean, I don't know why I'm still clinging to this, but it resonates with me, first of all. And I guess I feel like certain things are better left unsaid. And I find that like there's a lot now of hugging and kissing and saying, I'm proud of you and I love you. It's marafsh.
We're not the type of house that is, I love you gratuit. Like, it's not for free. When Hannah and Tamara race, Hannah's 2 years younger than Tamara. She's faster than her. Tamara is super pissed, but we don't have participation medals in my house.
Okay.
You lose, sit down, take it like
a chip. Okay.
Oh, no.
Does that come from your history in sports?
Yeah. And when we grew up, first, second, third.
Best.
Nobody, there was no medal, there was no ribbon for fourth. If you lost, you lost. Shut up. Right? So my girls, we do martial arts together. We climb together. Tamara, put her on a wall. She's like Spider-Woman. Hannah's gangly. She still hasn't figured it out. She's like, Papi, I don't like it. I said, gazma. And she climbs. So it's not, I love you, free love, free hug. Lala. It's not that.
There's no doubt that the Matar Farm continues to take Dubai by storm and has gained high praise from the local community. But how do you scale a business like that? Something that is so dependent on Hatem, the individual, a business even he himself calls an analog business.
We'll dig into that right after the short break. Welcome back. You're listening to our conversation with Hatem Matar, founder of the Matar Farm, who just a week ago was recognized at this year's Caterer Middle East Awards.
It's like winning Best Actor with Denzel Washington on the list. You know what I mean?
Was that Denzel Washington on the list?
Izu was on there.
That is our Denzel Washington.
Yeah, exactly. Emma Banks.
Yeah.
Izu, Akmal, Sandy.
Yeah, fantastic.
Who's our mentor? Like, it's the who's who. Poor farmer, Falah from Barsha. I'm sitting at the dinner
table. I live in Barsha. Please don't.
But I'm saying, but so you're a businessman.
One a posh Barsha. Barsha 3, Mandoa Tari Khas.
Yeah, I'm Barsha 3.
That's the Zamalek of Barsha. Please stop. Yeah, Zatkin.
We are Barsha 3.
Ma'arafaksh. Never seen you in my
see? He said it
Never
himself.
Never seen you in my
He
neighbor.
Said it himself.
I am in your, I'm hired.
Follow your nose.
Frankly, no, I'm going to follow you home and see if you're in Barsha 3.
Well,
you're probably at the cusp of 2 or 3 where these weird people live.
Right next to Barsha Mall.
Weird.
Anyway,
they're letting anyone in this, yes.
We got, I'm eating cheesecake. I was there just to dress nice and to take a few pictures and go home. They're like, and the award goes to the incredible, the extraordinary. I'm eating cheesecake. Hatem Matar. I'm like, oh man, mabruk. Oh my God, that's me. And you can see it in the video.
It's fully deserved. Honestly, I'm not just saying this. Honestly, you have really built a following, a brand, a lifestyle. You have fantastic energy. It shows.
Thank you. Yani,
when I went to Time Out, with all due respect to all the others, many friends there, the first thing we went to was you. Allah, my son wanted to go there. Yeah. He said, oh my God, it's here. Because we had gone to Serkel in one of the pop-ups and it was closed and he was upset. Baba, you promised me. Yani, really, this is not coming out of nothing.
Thank you.
So
I really
it's well deserved. But now that you have the Time Out outpost, I mean, how are you looking at this? Are you looking at this as many multiple permanent locations?
No. Okay. Now that alhamdulillah, we've earned our seat at the table.
Yeah.
Now I want to tell the people sitting around us that are now our peers that we're not a one-trick pony.
Sah. Right? That's very important.
I don't want to be... We overheard people saying, he only makes barbecue. I'm like, oh, really?
But that's okay too, huh?
Totally. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, Domino's Pizza is where they are, or Shake Shack doing one SQ.
No problem. Our skill set, what we're famous for is barbecue. But barbecue falls under the giant worldwide umbrella of live fire cuisine. Can I make a hollandaise? No. Can I tend to a fire for 3 days in a row without sleeping and have an end product that no one in the country can replicate? Yes.
Okay. That's what you want.
Yes. A space and a platform.
Is that scalable?
We're not a scalable business. No, we're not a scalable business. I'm not trying to be a scalable
business. You don't
want
to build a scalable business? What do you want then?
Scalable business to me means, no disrespect, because we've got people on those platforms like Deliveroo, Talabat, Batikh.
Rakeem.
It took me 14 days to make your pastrami sandwich. The least you could do is come say hello. The least you could do is come say, Hatem, ala fikra, this was a horrible sandwich. I don't care. I appreciate the interaction. I appreciate that you made the trip. Barbecue is an analog experience. It's probably one of the last of the analog experiences.
Yeah, it is.
You smell it. You've got.
But I think that's part of the attraction.
You can't scale analog.
Yeah.
You can scale digital. People are asking me for your metrics. How much wastage? Barbecue is an analog experience. There is no. There's a cooking school. Inshallah, one day I'm going to go to Cordon Bleu, Japan, and become a real chef. Right? There is no school of live fire. There is no barbecue school. You have to earn that like a black belt. And they say you are not wealthy until you have something money can't buy. Right? To be a pit master, another pit master.
Can you define the whole pit master thing? Because I'm a bit...
Sure. A pit master is the guy that manages all of the fires at a barbecue joint to create or get the menu out of the door.
And this originated in the States?
In Texas.
Texas, which is where you went as well.
Yeah. Texas, the South, Georgia, everybody's a pit master there. But to be called a pit master, another pit master has to call you that. You can't call yourself.
Yeah, but I mean, I could have like 2 beers with you on the side and be like, oh, you're a pit master. One anymore.
But you are not a pit master.
Oh, come on. How do you know that?
I know.
Anyway.
So I'm saying the reason we're not scalable.
I live on the good side of Barsha, but anyway, that's a different story.
The reason I'm not looking to be scalable is because scale for me means digital. And in a world that is Everything is digital. Your car wash, your thing. You can order everything to the house except Matar Farm.
طيب, but so the analog experience, can I just push back here a bit, could also be, I mean, you could have multiple of experiences doing that.
يعني, sure.
Your experience could be in multiple places in Dubai, in Abu Dhabi, in Riyadh, in Cairo.
That sure, maybe, but not scalable in the sense that we're, maybe I think scalable, I think like, you know, 12 locations, dozens of, no. Scalable, yes. Could it do 2-3? Yes.
Why can you not do 12?
I don't want to.
Is the concept scalable? Yes, it is. You don't want to do 12. That's a different story. But I'm pushing back. I'll tell you why. We had this conversation earlier. Because I feel at some point when you have a strong concept, which you definitely do, you go through those motions of thinking, you know, can I expand this? But how do I do it without losing my soul?
I've got an Arabic saying. My mother used to tell me this all the time. إِنَّمَا غَلَى الذَّهَبْ بِنَدْرَتِهِ. Same.
There is value in scarcity, no question.
Same.
Which is what you
said.
And not
facetious scarcity. For me to expand, I need to have a pitmaster and a guy that has a palate.
Exactly. So we're going to get... That's exactly what I want to get. Yeah. Lama, you got there, man. I want to get there.
And I need to have
a control issue?
No. I wish there was a pitmaster that could come and understand third culture barbecue, right? The way we do it.
Can't you get 5 guys from Texas and teach them?
No, because that's not third culture barbecue. That's Texas barbecue. Look...
Can you get 5 guys from Barsha and teach them?
We could. But that's a, you know, now, and you know this, عينك مش على حاجة, there's a give or take of 15%. غيب 3 شهور, it becomes 20. غيب 4 شهور, it becomes, you know what I'm saying? And no disrespect to the people that do this. Our food is not gimmicks. There's no gold leaf. There's no secret move, right? Our food is legit. If you make a mistake in brisket, it's 18 hours worth of mistake. There's no gimmicks there. If I tell a guy, do this, yeah, whatever, who cares? You can't cover it with sauce. Barbecue is the most unpretentious, but also the most unforgiving cuisine on the planet.
Why so?
While, خلاص, you got the chicken right, you got the spice right, you got all of that, you put it on the smoker, you get a 15-second, 2-3-minute flare-up where temperature spikes, your chicken's gone. And you have to start from scratch. And guess what? The guy that ordered the chicken, he has to wait another 2 hours. My food, our food, is not a panini, 15 minutes, it's ready. The pastrami that goes out, our pastrami was number 11 on the top 25 sandwiches in the world.
It's delightful.
Yeah, and it's
really,
it's delightful. I was just blown away. But that pastrami takes 14 days. Not 10, not 7, not 12, 14 days.
When I used to live in New York, I used to be obsessed with a place called Katz Deli, which you may have heard of, which had the most fantastic pastrami sandwich.
Yeah, they're the reference.
Yeah, and yours is like, yani, definitely at that so level. Much.
We want a kid to grow up from here, if you want like the ethos of the Matar Farm, Irkin, all of the business aside. I want the Matar Farm 10 years from now to be a place that people can still come back to because Dubai changes super quick. There is nothing here from when I grew up in 1998 other than Al Ijaza. Right?
Which tells you something about this business that we're both in.
Right? And Al Ijaza, the guys that are there, 2 of the guys that are there, used to make me juice when I was 17. Right? I want the Matar Farm to be that place where kids have grown up eating it, inshallah, your son, have grown up eating it. They go to university. They come back and they bring their families and say, I used to eat here as a kid, number one. Number two, when he goes to NYU, inshallah, or Columbia, he goes to Katz.
What's wrong with Harvard, sorry?
Meshi Harvard, no problem. Harvard. I'm just saying, because it's New York. It's a New York reference.
My wife teaches at NYU, so it's fine.
Okay.
I was a bit surprised.
Lala, I'm just saying NYU because it's a New York reference. He goes to Katz and says, what do you guys do here? They're like, oh, we make pastrami. And he's like, oh, you mean like Matar Farm?
Oh, that's beautiful. I like that. I love that.
That's what we want.
That's great.
I want you
that's
to order that excellence. I say that with the greatest of humility. I don't want you to order that excellence on a couch. I want you to come see it, hear it, touch it, feel it in person.
No, I think we're on the same page. I did not necessarily mean that it had to be digital or it had to be on an app. Mm. I meant that you could, with the right setup, have that experience in multiple locations.
Yes.
And I personally think you should.
Inshallah.
Because I think it's a great experience.
Inshallah.
But as we've all learned, people are busy. People don't like to move too much. It's okay to bring it to them. You just have to figure out how to do it in a way that, you know,
stays true to who
you are. Stays to who you are and has meaning for you.
So.
So one of your other quotes was, I'm Wolverine, interestingly enough. Djokovic, who's a tennis player, who's number one player in the world, said that he has wolf energy when he won the US Open. And you were a Wolverine. So I don't know if you and Djokovic talk.
We used to hang out when we were kids.
Okay, I figured as much. In Serbia?
You know my Serbian upbringing. No, actually, his Egyptian upbringing. You know what I mean?
Akid.
Yeah.
I'm sure you did. So walk us through that.
When I was in university, I picked up kickboxing.
Okay.
And obviously, having lived under my parents for so long, I was drinking out of the carton. I was walking around the house with no shirt on. All the stuff that you couldn't do. I grew my beard and my hair. And when I showed up at the gym, when we started putting the work in, everyone's like, you look like Wolverine. And so my ring name for the 4 years that I fought was Hatem Wolf Matar. And, you know, it was like weighing in 155 pounds, you know what I mean? My first fight, God bless him, God rest his soul, my coach, they're like, what's his ring name? He's like, I don't even know, he just showed up. They're like, the Prince of Egypt. So my first fight, I was Hatem the Prince of Egypt Matar. I'm like, you're never saying that again. So they called me the Wolf, just Wolf. And a lot of the time, in university, nobody knew my first name. They just called me Wolf. And it translated, like I identified with it because the wolf is a pack animal. Mm. It thrives in a pack and survives
on its own. That's what Djokovic said.
And survives on its own. Right? So there is the myth and the theory of lone wolf, which I am currently.
Are you a loner?
Yeah, للأسف.
لا, مش loner as in are you single for all the girls on
no,
there.
No.
Are you like a loner meaning يعني بحب أقعد لوحدي يعني? You prefer your own company versus
no,
being with people?
No, and this is for the ladies.
Now we know he's single.
Now you know ahead of time, I am also schizophrenic. I have the capability.
But you live in Barsha 3.
Yeah. I have the capability to put on the apron and become Superman. It's my alter ego with the big Matar logo right here. And then when I take that off at home, I live alone, week on, week off with my girls, all of our animals and stuff like that. There is a very quiet, timid Clark Kent.
Interesting.
I haven't
seen the timid side much.
You have to come to the house. I sit by myself. I listen to a certain type of music.
I can see that.
Right? I listen to a certain type of music.
It's me time.
Yeah, the soundtrack from K-Pax.
You expend a lot of energy. You give a lot of energy out.
Yes.
So maybe you need to, that's your time to rebuild.
Bzzzupt. But that's something I keep to myself. Right? It's not a public persona.
Talk to us a little bit about something you spoke about openly in the press, about your experience raising two children as a single father, which is very unique experience in many ways.
It's the excuse, wallah al-azim, I'm telling the truth, wallah al-azim,
no,
it's the excuse to stay a kid, right, without anyone calling me out for having milk and cookies for breakfast and watching cartoons. When I do that with the kids, there's people around me, they're like, oh my God, that's so cute, you watch cartoons. What they don't know is that I'm watching it for me.
But is it overwhelming? I'm genuinely asking.
No.
I have two kids.
No.
I'm not raising them by myself. No. When I took them this summer by myself for 3-4 weeks, there were times, and I'm very hands-on with children, but at times it felt overwhelming.
You know why I'm blessed and cursed at the same time? Because I get to do it for a stint and then, against my will or by choice, I don't get them for a week.
Okay.
So I get to do my own thing, whatever that is. And then I get them back.
So they come and they go.
They come and they go. They come and they go. They come and they go. So I get to live the best of both worlds, put that in quotations, right? But is it overwhelming? 1,000%. I have a 12-year-old. Wallah al-Azim, this morning, crying in the car. After she did her hair, she looks fantastic. Slept. She leans across the console, sleeps on my shoulder. She woke up, khalas, we're like 5 minutes from school, looked in the mirror, ayot, and I get frustrated when it's not like a real thing. I'm like, unless you are physically like in pain, something kasarit, I don't want you to cry. Papi, look at my hair. When I have no frame of reference for hair, I can do a lot of things, but I can't identify with it, so I can't understand that she's stressed.
Yeah.
So is it overwhelming? 1,000%. Mm. But the payoff is incomparable, right? Mm. So
I buy that.
If I could live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the rest of my life, just being a dad, I am that first. There's a thing I tell like the inner circle, father, fighter, farmer, flyer. And those four things are the way I identify as a person when I wake up in the morning. I'm a father first, I'm a fighter. Not in the literal sense, I still try and compete.
You feel this father thing took such a priority because you were separated, or you think that would have been the case anyway?
No, no, no. We were as a family unit. My ex-wife, God bless her, is a fantastic mother. Like the way they are now is because of how much their mother is into academia and structure and I'm a heathen on the other side. Eat with your hands. Yeah. No, eat with your hands. Like my ex-wife is like, please, ya Hatim, they are girls. Like, please, لما يرجعوا البيت, they have to not smell like smoke. They have to not have their shirts over their heads. They have to not have, you know what I mean? There's a balance. And we were like that when we were together. She was academia and structure and letters and speaking. And I was cartoons, backyard, let's plant tomatoes, let's go out. And like, when we would all come back into the house, it's like, اتفضلوا, wash up before you sit down. We're all like, stomping off into the distance. 20 years age difference, but I'm like, you know?
If I had told you a couple of years ago that this is where you'd be now doing, would you have, that wasn't the plan? Was there a plan?
Not in my wildest dreams.
But you strike me as competitive. So in my wildest dreams, I do think that you would have wanted to do something that is successful, that has meaning, that you're playing competitive sports. It shows that you're competitive.
The Matar Farm is my fourth business in the UAE.
Okay, that's great, actually.
The first three failed miserably. So did I want to own my own business? 1,000%. Was the Matar Farm supposed to be one of those businesses? Absolutely not.
Isn't that great that this is your fourth attempt? And honestly, isn't it humbling and in many ways exhilarating probably? Because that's something, Masalan, that people here don't talk much about. If you live in California, it's very celebrated that you've had three businesses and didn't work and the fourth one worked.
No, I tell people all the time.
I think that's great.
Yeah. All three of the previous ones were agencies that I brought in. One of them was West Coast Customs. Remember Pimp My Ride?
Yeah. I would have told you I didn't work. But yeah. Anyway,
That's another, the story for another day. The other one was the clothing company called Tap Out. I owned that agency for the Middle East when mixed martial arts still hadn't picked up here.
So interesting. So what didn't work, you brought agencies, but now that you did a homegrown thing, which is very you, that worked.
Yeah.
Doesn't that tell you
and
something?
And I always thought I was going to be in the fighting space. Mm. Like even when
Why don't you start your own clothes brand?
Because everybody's doing that, Hashim.
Are they?
Yes. Look at your Instagram. Everybody, there's, just to name a few, The Giving Movement, mashallah alayhum, Joa Brown. I don't know, there's one out of Tunis now. There's everybody, because now back in the day, to open a clothing brand, you had to own the factory. Now you can have a phone, create a brand, and رحم الله امرئ عرف قدره فوقف عنده. I'm not a clothing guy. I don't know the first thing about clothing. Do I think people will wear something with the Matar Farm logo? 1,000?
That's what I meant.
Yes. No, I know. And people are always asking me to buy my apron. People are always asking to buy our spice and our wooden cutting boards. 1,000%, there's a community centered around that.
That's what I meant.
That if you wear Quicksilver, you're not necessarily a surfer. I know we have a Matar Farm community. But the next iteration of that, I don't want it to be facetious. I don't want it to be a business. I don't want it to be a business. I want it to be, Hatim, I'm making ribs. What do I do this weekend? I'm like, go pick up that bag in the corner there. That's our rib mix. They'll pick up the bag of wood that we've created for them to make ribs. And their cutting board, and constantly in use. Hatim, where is this cutting? Bro, that's in the back corner. You know what I mean? And I want to be the old guy, 50 years old, no teeth, smelling like smoke, telling people where to go in the store that we build together. You know? A log cabin somewhere. Deli cuts that we made ourselves, smoked honey, like a pantry, the Matar Farm pantry.
It's great.
Yeah.
So now you're in timeout, just to be very clear. Yes. You're in timeout, you have a permanent location there. You're going to have two locations in Expo for the next 6 months.
Yes.
Inshallah. Can you tell us a bit more about those locations?
Sure. So the Matar Farm started off as a catering business. That's back on.
Okay.
We're at Dubai Design Week, just downstairs.
Fantastic. We'll be there too.
Yeah, the events business is back on.
Okay.
Timeout is, chugging along, and inshallah we go back to 100% capacity in the next couple of weeks.
Whenever I go, there's a line.
Yeah.
You're doing well.
Alhamdulillah. Abu Dhabi's calling, Cairo is calling,
Fantastic.
Jumeirah is calling, and all of these things are still pie in the sky because, again, my protectionism over who we are.
As you should. What will you do at Expo exactly?
Expo is the Matar Farm Express, our first food truck.
Oh,
it's
bro.
All the stuff.
How cool.
Yeah, all the stuff that we and love, brisket, pastrami, wings, inshallah, all of that stuff. And then I've got a kitchen under my name. At Rising Flavors. We're going to be there making all of the limited edition stuff that we used to do one time and one time only, like we're doing a lamb pastrami pocket for Egyptian baladi bread.
Oh my God,
yeah?
That's lovely.
We're doing a Rocky Road Atayif.
Wow.
Right off the grill. Chicken shawarma اللي انت عارفها, but smoked over oak instead of grilled this way.
How do you think about new dishes and menu development and these things? I mean, is it just you? Are you in conversation with people?
No.
In your head?
Yeah.
Alone?
I just...
ايش بلدي on the menu?
بصحى الصبح, I have an idea. It's probably weird to see how many barbecues I have in my backyard. I'm OCD that way, like 12. And each of them does something. I try different barbecues, different meats, changing only one variable per barbecue so I know which one works. Make something, invite the crew over, the same way we started. Invite the crew over, what do you think? Everyone's like, oh, this was fantastic.
But I'm what's like, first creativity?
Like I said, I'm not... The live fire cuisine belongs to the vegetarian cultures of the world. They cook their veggies over fire. The Scandinavians up in the north, they have live fire cuisine. Live fire cuisine belongs to every country on the planet. So if you can imagine that someone says, oh, you make barbecue, that's this much of live fire cuisine. There's so much more to do. And I'm always constantly thinking about how can we make it ours, use a different flavor, use a different ingredient, use a different technique.
And it's all completely you.
Yeah.
So you really trust your instinct. I mean, I'm just talking about this because we go through menu development and it's a difficult process. Yeah, it's a fun process.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I'm like, do I trust my instincts? Does this make sense? Is that what people want? Should I care about what people want? Yeah, there's so many iterations to this.
Yeah. Alhamdulillah, the stuff that we try at one-off events.
Okay.
Does well.
Yeah.
I mean, after the back end process.
That's helpful. So you do a catering event, people are like, we love this Hatem. You're like, okay, yeah, this may be a new thing.
Like the brisket Mendi, for example, was.
That's how it happened.
Yeah. Pastrami mac and cheese, the pastrami pocket, the chicken shawarm, all of that stuff is stuff that we've
been. And what I love about it is it's really, truly, genuinely third culture. Yeah? And you are mixing so many things into that.
Yeah.
And of your own identity.
And that's exactly why the Matar Farm is a place for connection. You're having American-style brisket with Sudanese, Syrian, Egyptian spices cooked in the UAE. I actually overheard this in the line. There was two Moroccans standing in line at El Serkal. And you remember what the El Serkal line was like.
Yeah.
And I heard this guy in French.
He didn't know you come from the Munib tribe.
Exactly.
I understand French.
And I overheard him. He said, Baba, I'm not waiting in line for this. You can get smoked meat anywhere. The other guy, Radda Alay, what did he say? He said, but the only place you can get Matar Farm is here. I took them by the hand. I said, viens les gars. And he's like, oh, pardon, je m'excuse. Je voulais pas. No. Wallahi, you just made my year. I tell all those people, that people are like, oh, there's a new guy making ribs. There's a new guy making brisket. I'm like, Baba, all of those people are in the smoked meat business. We're in the Matar Farm business, and there's only one of us.
I think that's brilliant. Hatem, it's been great. Thank you. We wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you for having me.
Honestly, fantastic to have you here. And we wish you the best at Expo. And we'll most definitely be coming to visit very soon.
I hope I can call you my friend after this and I get to come back.
We're going to talk about
this. We'll talk about that.
Don't get excited. Thank you for joining us on the Lighthouse Conversations with me, Hasha Montasser. We're produced by Chirag Desai and our content director is Farah Al-Sharif. You can tell us what you thought of this episode by leaving us a review in your podcast app or finding us on Instagram at thelighthouse_AE. And please, share a link with your friends if you've enjoyed this. We'll see you again in 2 weeks.